Digital LEDs pulse and flicker, finally resting on the number 24.
The following takes place between 6 a.m. and 7 a.m.
America has been victimized again. Last night's terrorist attack in San Antonio is now the latest in this series of bombings that began 11 weeks ago in 10 different cities. Over 900 people have been killed thus far, and while no one is claiming responsibility for this wave of death, evidence points to Islamic militants. Here in Los Angeles, the mood can only be described as tense and fearful, as the Department of Homeland Security is urging all citizens to report without delay any suspicious persons or activities. We spoke with a department spokesperson who says, quote, "We don't want to start a witch hunt, but we would rather err on the side of caution than become the next target." He then went on to say that the vigilance of the public is our best line of defense against attack.
Hey! Stop! Open the doors! Please, I have to get to work. I'll be late for work. Please, open the door! Come on, man. Open the door! Open the door! I can't believe you didn't open the door! I have as much right to be on the bus as you!
The young man, who is of Arab or North African appearance, is left on the curb by the suspicious driver. The bus pulls away. Sitting in the middle of the bus is a young man with Chinese or East Asian features. He fiddles with his MP3 player and shifts the satchel on the seat next to him. He stares ahead of him at the busy cityscape. The bus stops at a red light. The young man's eyes narrow and he presses a button on the MP3 player. The bus explodes in a great star of orange flame engulfing passing cars and people at the White House.
Our country is under siege. Now, you're the national security advisor, Karen. Frankly, I'm surprised by your resistance.
These places that you keep building, they're nothing more than concentration camps.
Detention facilities. And the criteria for determining who shall be detained are very reasonable.
Reasonable. This revised plan of yours justifies locking up every American who prays towards Mecca.
That's a ridiculous exaggeration, and you know it.
Right now, the American Muslim community is our greatest asset. They have provided law enforcement with hundreds of tips, and not a single member of that community has been implicated in these attacks.
So far, Mr. President, the people are losing faith in our ability to protect them. We've got to do something about this now.
And locking up more Muslims will not make them safer.
No, Karen. But it will make them feel safer.
What about the cost of the civil unrest that your plan will create? There will
Security
be riots, demonstrations.
Security has its price.
So does freedom, Tom. Listen, I just don't see how I can sign off on something like this. I mean, wasn't it just 3 months ago that I took an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution?
And what about preserving, protecting, and defending the American people? All of these measures are legal. Blake has been all over this thing with the Attorney General.
There is a precedent, sir, especially in wartime. Lincoln suspended habeas corpus. Roosevelt signed executive order.
Yes, Blake, I know this. And Roosevelt imprisoned over 200,000 Japanese Americans in what most historians consider to be a shameful mistake.
Well, I would ask those historians how many of those Japanese Americans were thus prevented from perpetrating acts of sabotage in this country. I realize that what I'm proposing has its challenges, but we cannot continue to keep our heads buried in the sand.
Mr. President.
Yeah. Another attack?
Los Angeles, a bus.
How many casualties?
23 so far, including the suicide bomb.
President Wayne Palmer turns tensely away from Karen Hayes and the other aides sitting on sofas in the Oval Office. He turns to the desk on which sits a dossier with a photo of a bearded man under the name of Hamri al-Assad.
And we're still certain this man Assad is behind all these attacks, right?
Yes, sir. We confirmed he arrived in the United States 3 days before the first bombing in San Antonio.
And let us not forget Assad has been calling for the destruction of the United States for the last 20 years.
Mr. President, my analysts believe that Assad's organization cannot survive without him, and once he's dead, these attacks will stop.
So this assumes the success of the operation to terminate Assad.
CTU estimates successful probability at 75%.
Oh, I think that's very generous.
You know, it sounds to me like you're anticipating failure, Tom.
I fully acknowledge, sir, that this is our only option, but I am fervently advocating contingencies.
Contingencies are well and good, Tom, but CTU needs to eliminate Hassan. That's all there is to it. God knows we're paying a steep enough price to get him.
I've told you 20 times. You don't send out a report without a certified header on it.
Well, this makes 21. You should update your count.
Do you, and I'm just curious, ever open your mouth without sarcasm just spilling out of it?
Sorry, are we done here?
Look, I'm just telling you to be careful. Otherwise, you will find yourself back selling ladies' shoes in Beverly Hills.
You're really settling well into the whole middle management thing, aren't you?
What's your problem with me?
I liked you fine as an analyst. Actually, you were very good. As a boss, bit of a bull.
What's going on?
Talk to your boyfriend. He's on self-destruct.
You promised me you'd get along with Milo.
I'm sorry, darling. That's a promise I just can't keep.
Morris. You know, I had the same problem with department heads when I first started, and I learned how to fit in. There's no reason why you can't.
Except I don't happen to be a pretty lady.
What are you talking about?
You're a hottie.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. Deal with it.
Morris, we're at work.
What's up?
It's unprofessional.
They say you don't like him?
No, I'm not saying that. I just came to see if you got a request from Homeland on the Priority Channel.
No.
Why did they send it only to me?
I don't know.
Just try to get along.
Because you asked, I will.
Nadia, I just got a weird request from Homeland Security. They want to set up a channel, and I wanted to clear it with you first.
Consider yourself clear.
They want it formatted according to military specs.
Coordinating assault with the Cobra attack helicopters from Camp Pendleton.
When?
30 minutes.
But assault on who?
Assad.
What are you talking about? We don't even know where Assad is.
We will. We have a lead.
No, we don't. If we did, I would know about it.
We found a way to get Assad's location.
How?
Jack Bauer.
Jack's in a Chinese prison.
Not anymore. The president negotiated his release 2 days ago.
Jack's coming back?
Yes.
Well, why did the Chinese let him go? Why today? Does this have something to do with the attacks? How do we think Jack's going to lead us to Assad?
Chloe, I can't talk about this. Not yet.
Why not? Can Bill Buchanan talk about it?
He's meeting Jack at Point Magoon Naval Air Station. Now open that military channel and put it through to the conference area.
Chloe looks deeply troubled. 607. Armed troops jump down from the rear of a truck. Along a runway taxis a huge grey military propeller plane. Bill Buchanan and Curtis stand on the edge of the airstrip looking on.
The president must have given up a lot to make this happen.
I wish you were coming back under different circumstances. We don't know what his state of mind will be. If he doesn't cooperate, we need to be prepared.
Bill and Curtis set off grimly towards the plane. Curtis pulls the tail of his jacket away from the heavy pistol in the holster of his belt. Soldiers run to take up flanking positions around the two men as they near the rear hatch door of the huge cargo plane, which is now open. Down the ramp from the strangely glowing red interior of the hold walk a delegation of soberly dressed Chinese officials. In the center of these appears Jack Bauer, scarcely recognizable in his grey jumpsuit and long beard. He stops and blinks in the light almost timidly. Bill eyes Jack compassionately as the leader of the Chinese delegation comes to a stop in front of him.
Mr. Buchanan, I need your signature on this release document.
Take those cuffs off.
No fun, okay?
One of the Chinese men guarding Jack approaches him and unlocks the metal handcuffs around his wrists. The skin on his right hand appears puckered and damaged. Curtis looks at Jack. Jack, almost hesitantly to begin with, holding the hostile gaze of the leader of the Chinese officials, moves slowly away behind Curtis. The Chinese leader turns back to Bill.
Please convey to your president that Mr. Bauer never broke his silence. He hasn't spoken a word in nearly 2 years. Your president has paid a high price for Mr. Bauer's freedom. What he wants from him must be very important.
Bill eyes the Chinese official coldly and then turns away without a flicker. Jack follows Curtis into a hangar. In the center of the floor is a table and chair. Jack sits at the table. Bill Buchanan walks in briskly.
President Palmer wants to speak to you himself as soon as we debrief. I'm sorry, Jack. How could you know? Wayne Palmer is president. He's the one who negotiated your release. I can't even begin to imagine what you went through over there, Jack. But there's a reason you're here now.
6:10.
The last 11 weeks, our cities have been targeted by a series of terror attacks. Buses, trains, shopping malls. The last one was 15 minutes ago here in Los Angeles. It's Hamri al-Assad. Assad's here, Jack. 4 days ago, one of Assad's men contacted us. He said he'd give up Assad for $25 million. But he's demanding something more than money. He wants you, Jack. He wants you dead.
Jack barely reacts. Curtis looks down at Jack. Bill flips onto the table a photo of an Arab man.
It's Abu Fayyad. He wants his pound of flesh for what happened in Beirut. We offered him other alternatives. We did everything we could think of, Jack. But he would only agree to give us Assad in exchange for you.
He's demanded our surveillance protocols, which means we can't risk an extraction. Once he has you, you'll be on your own.
You understand what this means, Jack? We're asking you to sacrifice yourself so we can eliminate Assad. I can't hear you, Jack.
Audrey.
Audrey doesn't know you're back.
My daughter.
Kim doesn't know either.
Keep it that way.
Bill nods.
I know what's being asked of me, Curtis. You don't need your firearm.
Curtis holsters his gun.
Before we do this, I would like to clean up.
We've got an area set up for you and brought you some new clothes.
Jack gets up from the table. Under the solicitous gazes of Bill and Curtis, he walks somewhat stiffly and unsteadily towards a table set up with mirror, bowl and pitcher. He catches sight of his own face in the mirror and blinks as if in surprise. He pulls the jumpsuit off his shoulders, revealing terrible weals all over his back and upper arms. 6:13, end of part one. Six 19, Bill Buchanan at the airbase makes a call on his mobile. Karen at the White House answers.
Bill?
We have Jack.
Good.
I thought I was prepared, but he's worse than I expected, much worse.
I know how hard this must be for you. But everything depends on this operation.
I understand.
I know you do.
Karen fingers a diamond ring on her left hand.
I wish I were there with you.
You're where you need to be.
I miss you.
I miss you too.
I have to take Jack to the drop point now. Bye.
Los Angeles has now been added to the list of major cities hit by terrorist attacks. The Department of Homeland Security has raised the threat level to red, the highest level since the department was formed.
FBI will handle all the field searches outside the city, so just focus on the main grid.
Yes, ma'am.
Nadia, I need to talk to you.
All right, better shut up and check back with me. Did you open that military channel and put it through to the conference area?
Yeah, I've been trying to locate Bill or Curtis to find out what's going on with Jack, but they're both offline and there's a block on their status roster.
I told you, Chloe, I can't talk about this.
Nadia, you've only been here a couple months, so you don't know me very well. But if you did, you would know how much Jack Bauer means to me. You would also know that sooner or later, I will find out.
So why don't you just tell me right now?
Chloe, I don't have the authorization.
Okay, why don't I just call Division and let them know about the time that you left the Jarvis firewall unsecured? If it weren't for me, you would have been fired over that.
Nadia absorbs this and sits down slowly at the desk.
We were contacted 4 days ago by a man named Fayed. He offered to give us a south location for a list of demands, and one of them was Jack Bauer.
Jack? Why does he want Jack?
Retribution.
Retribution for what?
Fayed's brother was part of the cell that bombed our embassy in Lebanon in 1999. Jack was sent in to grab him and get the names of the other cell members. Fayed's brother died while Jack was interrogating him.
Now he wants Jack dead.
That's right.
And you're really gonna just deliver Jack over to the terrorists to be killed? Nadia.
We need to stop Assad.
Well, why aren't we organizing a rescue? We can just grab Jack once Fayed gives us Assad's location.
Fayed has the resources to detect our surveillance. As part of the deal, we gave Fayed monitoring access to our satellite coverage, radio frequencies, and air corridors. He won't give us anything until he's free and clear with Jack.
How do we even know he'll do what he says?
We don't.
I'm calling Karen Hayes. She'll talk to the president.
Chloe, don't you get it? Karen already knows. So does President Palmer. He authorized it.
Utterly crestfallen, Chloe hangs up the phone. Nadia moves closer in sympathy.
Look, I'm sorry about your friend, but there's nothing you, I, or anyone can do right now. This is our only way out of this crisis. If we want these attacks to stop, Jack Bauer has to be sacrificed.
Chloe's face registers dismay, resentment, and possibly a hint of rebellion. Nadia picks up her phone and her files from the desk and exits. The raffish Morris, Chloe's ex, sees from the other side of the room that she is in distress and looks on solicitously as she emerges slowly from the side office and sits back down at her workstation. Morris picks up his phone and dials. Chloe stares ahead, oblivious to her ringing phone.
We've gotten half those upgrades.
You get the rest in a minute.
No, I need them now, Morris. I needed them 10 minutes ago. And don't expect Chloe to keep running interference for you.
You'll get your upgrades.
When?
Morris crosses over to Chloe's desk.
What's going on between you and Nadia?
The president got Jack back from the Chinese. He's in L.A. now.
Well, that's very good news.
No, Morris, it's not.
Jack, now shaven but still blank-faced, stares from the rear window of a moving car. In the front seat sits Bill Buchanan, who takes a call.
Buchanan.
Bill, it's the president. Is Jack with you?
Yes, sir. We're almost at the drop point.
Let me speak to him, please.
Open him up. Jack. Jack. It's President Palmer. He wants to talk to you. Mr. President.
Jack.
I've been trying to think of what I could possibly say to you.
After all that you've sacrificed for this country.
What you've done for me in the past, and of course, what you've done for my brother David. This is a desperate measure, Jack. Believe me, I know.
But it's also a measure of our desperation.
People are afraid to come outside. They're afraid to leave their homes, Jack. I mean, they're actually starting to turn against each other out there.
Bill Buchanan, explain the situation, sir. I know what's happening. I understand what's expected of me.
You have my word. My word, Jack. Your sacrifice will not be in vain.
Thank you.
God bless you, Jack.
Goodbye, Mr. President.
The president speaks to Tom, his aide.
When I agreed to run for this office, I thought that I understood this job. I mean, I was right beside my brother David when he had to make impossible decisions, you know, times when he had to choose between bad options. But now that I'm the one sitting in that chair, I'm starting to wonder if I'm the right person to lead this country.
That's an irrelevant question, sir.
Excuse me.
You will lead this country. whether you want to or not. You are the president.
This president can't shake the feeling that sacrificing Jack Bauer is a mistake, and that maybe I should just call this whole thing off before it's too late.
No, sir. You have not made a mistake. And for what it's worth, your brother would be doing just the same thing.
That doesn't make it right.
It isn't right. It isn't wrong. It's simply our only option. Bauer has to be sacrificed so this country can survive.
President Palmer processes this painful truth. Tom walks towards the door, leaving the president alone. Outside the door, Tom meets Karen Hayes.
I just heard a disturbing rumor.
What rumor is that?
That you're authorizing the National Guard to set up detention facilities at convention centers and sports arenas in Los Angeles, Detroit, and Philadelphia.
That's correct.
That's against the president's order. I was there when he gave it.
Karen, I know where you were. I was standing right next to you.
To my knowledge, that order hasn't been rescinded.
All right. You are confused. I haven't implemented anything yet. I'm merely positioning. If the president changes his mind, as I suspect he will, then we will have wasted less time.
I'm not confused, Tom, and you can use whatever words you like. In plain English, you're second-guessing the president.
Well, plain English does not allow for the nuances that my job requires, Karen.
And just how far are you going to push this? The ACLU is already filing complaints against us that we've given the Bureau too much field authority.
And by my lights, they have not been given near enough. They need a wider net with tighter mesh.
And what happens when innocent people get caught in that net?
Well, like I told you before, security has its price. Just get used to it.
Karen looks askance at Tom as he retreats into an office. 6:28, Bill Buchanan leads Jack and Curtis along a stark concrete canal devoid of water. Bill's mobile rings.
Go ahead.
Secure Bauer's wrist to the grate, then leave him there.
First, tell me where Assad is.
This isn't a negotiation. If you want Assad, leave Bauer here, get back in your car, and drive away. I'm watching you.
You listen to me, you son of a bitch. He wants me to handcuff you to that grate.
Do it.
Jack walks over to a rusted metal grate across an inlet in the wall. He stands stoically and places his left hand on the bars so that Bill can attach him to the grate with metal handcuffs.
I don't know what to say.
Jack looks gravely at Bill.
Do you understand the difference between dying for something and dying for nothing? The only reason I fought so hard to stay alive in China was because I didn't want to die for nothing. Today, I can die for something. My way, my choice.
Bill gazes at Jack as if blinking back tears of admiration.
To be honest with you, it'll be a relief.
Bill glances over at the anguished Curtis.
I'm sorry, Jack. Don't me. Bill, you need to go.
Bill turns, giving Jack the slightest of pats on the shoulder, and walks away. Curtis manages to tear his eyes away from Jack and follows Buchanan. Jack looks around, almost as if checking out possible escape strategies, but then turns back and stares fatalistically at the grating. 6:30, end of part two. Part three.
Firemen are battling a fire at the Al-Hamsa Mosque in Culver City. Members of the mosque are calling the incident a retaliation for this morning's suicide bombing that happened downtown on a metro bus.
Scott shouldn't be going to school.
He has a geometry test.
Honey, L.A. was just hit. I mean, they should be closing these schools down.
They will close them down when it's not safe. But until then, I don't want to scare our son, and I don't want you scaring him either. I want us to keep living our lives as normally as we can.
No, look, Jillian, there is nothing normal what's happening here.
Well, what are we supposed to do? Just hide inside our house for the rest of our lives?
No, it should... Hey.
Was Ahmed able to help?
I didn't get a chance to see him. The FBI are at his house. They're arresting his dad.
What?
The teenage boy, followed by his parents, goes to look out of the window. Across the street, a man is being led away.
Why are they taking him?
I don't know.
This is insane. You can't arrest somebody without a reason. He's not a terrorist. He's innocent.
There's gotta be some reason.
I'm sure it's a mistake.
Ahmed, the teenage Asian boy, notices two men who have been watching the arrest. He hurriedly goes inside, shutting the front door of the house. The men pursue him.
Ahmed! What are you doing? I just want to talk to you, okay? Ahmed, get out here!
It's that guy down the block. The contractor stands something.
Yeah, I know. I'll call the police.
Come on!
Why don't you get the hell out of my neighborhood?
What are you doing?
I'm helping Ahmed.
Your father is calling the police.
They won't do anything.
Scott, stop. You're not going over there.
Dad, I'm not hiding here while Ahmed gets beat up because you're scared to do the right thing.
Scott, stay here. I'll handle it.
The father of the white teenager steals himself and heads out. His wife and son look unsure. Stan, meanwhile, kicks in the front door of Ahmed's house.
Hey, I just want to talk to you.
Get out of my house.
I was just here to give you a little friendly advice, okay?
Stan! What the hell are you doing, man?
I'm trying to protect my family, right? This kid's father's a terrorist.
Oh, come on, he's no more of a terrorist than you or me.
Yeah? Why'd they arrest him?
Because they're scared. Like everyone else.
Get out of my way.
Hey, Stan, come on! Stan! If you want him, you're coming through me.
Stan looks from the father to Ahmed, who, terrified, holds a chair in front of himself for protection.
This isn't over, Ray.
Stan backs away unwillingly. His sidekick follows him out through the front door. Ahmed puts down the chair, still panting in terror.
You all right?
Yeah.
All right, look, I think what we should do is you should come stay with us until things get sorted out with your father.
Look, I appreciate what you just did, but I'll be fine.
Look, this guy is a jerk, and I don't want you staying here alone. It's dangerous. I'm not taking no for an answer. You're coming with me.
Nadia, Bill Buchanan for you. Bill.
Jack's at the drop point. You set with the military?
Marines have two Cobra attack helicopters ready to deploy. We can hit any target inside LA within 20 minutes.
Jack's giving his life for this operation, so I don't want any mistakes. Assad must be taken out with extreme prejudice.
He will be searched as soon as we get his location from Fayed.
If Fayed calls before I get back, loop me in.
Yeah. Bill.
Yeah.
I'm sidelining Chloe on this operation.
Why?
She started asking questions about Jack. Look, I tried putting her off, but I...
What did you tell her?
The truth.
I'll talk to her when I get there.
Thanks.
6:41. Morris walks purposefully across to Chloe.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to get a visual on Jack.
I told you, Fayed has our surveillance protocols. He's monitoring full-spectrum radio, satellite orbits, and transmissions.
I have access to a satellite that's off the government grid.
How?
I did a drop of work for this energy consortium in Uzbekistan. They needed an illegal aerial survey of some oil fields. I needed some quick cash. Aha, look, the little bird. She's still fly. She's still fly. I think I can reposition the camera from here.
Worth.
Don't take me yet, love. Just stop sulking and find out where Bill Buchanan left Jack.
Jack stands, his left hand still chained to the grating. He looks around on hearing a vehicle. Down the concrete gully comes an SUV. Out from the vehicle step Abu Fayed and two henchmen. The henchmen run over to Jack and undo the handcuffs while the shaven-headed Fayed strolls towards him. Jack is hustled over to Fayed, who eyes him with venomous contempt.
I've been waiting for this for a long time.
Fayed flicks his head curtly and his sidekicks bundle Jack towards the back of the SUV. One of them punches Jack viciously in the head as he forces him onto the rear seat of the vehicle. Fayed looks on, then takes a call on his mobile.
Yes?
There is a problem. Don't move out of the tunnel yet.
What?
I just intercepted a signal to a privately owned satellite.
There are hundreds of private satellites.
The signal is being transmitted on a government frequency.
This satellite, what's it looking at?
I can't pinpoint it, but the camera's been great positioned to your sector.
Connect me to CTO.
Chloe, this is it. This is it.
As soon as the military has Assad's location, we'll work with local law enforcement to limit collateral damage. As much as we're trying to prevent civilian losses, our priority is to take out Assad.
Fayed is on the line.
This is Nadia, you sir.
Redirect the satellite you have aimed at this sector.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Then explain the activity on frequency Alpha 0703. Bauer is dead either way. But if you don't redirect that satellite in 30 seconds, you will lose Assad.
I'm telling you, there's no satellite.
28 seconds.
6:44.
Where is this coming from?
Inside the building.
Where?
Chloe Station.
Morris, redirect that satellite. Redirect that satellite.
The situation is under control.
No, Fayed tagged your transmission. We may have lost our only chance of locating Assad. Fayed, this was a rogue operation. We're redirecting the satellite now.
You have 10 seconds.
Morris, do it.
9.
Come
eight,
on, hurry up.
I'm going 7, as fast as I can.
6. 5. 4.
It's done.
It's moving away, Fayed. They redirected the satellite.
Other channels.
All clear.
Because of your deception, I will have to think about giving you Assad's location.
Wait, what about our deal?
Chloe's face crumples. Nadia grabs the phone.
Fayed. When Al-Sharif.
Subtitles read, Fayed, where is your honor? Fayed folds his phone up and walks grimly back towards the SUV. Nadia glances at Chloe. Bill Buchanan strides into CTU.
You may have spoken, Fayed.
I heard what happened.
Damn it! What were you thinking?
It's my fault. You can fire me.
I'd fire both of you right now, but I can't afford to lose the manpower.
Chloe. Look at me.
I'd rather not, sir.
Look at me.
Chloe turns unwillingly.
Don't think you're the only one mourning, Jack. You're not. That may have been our only option. You both better hope to God you didn't just blow it. You may have sacrificed Jack for nothing.
Nadia glances at Chloe, who stands chastened and remorseful, her eyes darting from side to side. 6:46, end of part 3. Part 4, 6:52. At the White House, Karen Hayes takes a call.
Karen.
Bill, have you heard from Fayed?
Not yet, no.
The president's worried. Fayed should have contacted us by now.
There may be a problem. There's a possibility Fayed's going back on the deal.
What are you talking about?
He caught us running a track, Jack.
The orders were that he was to have a clear field.
I know what the orders were. Chloe thought there was a workaround. She did it without authorization.
Oh, damn it, Bill. She's your responsibility. How could you let this happen? If we don't take out Assad, then...
I don't need a lecture, Karen. I know what the stakes are.
I don't think you do. If these attacks don't stop, there are people in this administration who are willing to tear up the Constitution in the name of national security. The things that they're talking about doing, this country will never recover.
As soon as I hear from Fayed, you'll be my first call.
I'm sorry, Bill. It's just, I'm...
There's no need to apologize. We're all feeling it.
I have to go.
Bill looks grim. 6:53. At Fayed's base, Fayed enters, followed by his two henchmen holding Jack.
Anything?
It's clear.
Are you sure?
Yes. They're leaving us alone. The money's been transferred. Should we call CTU?
Not yet.
Jack, blinking and with his face streaked with blood, is dragged away by his two captors who follow Fayed down a dour concrete corridor. At the end is a cell. They lead Jack towards a chair in the centre, past an obscene array of torture instruments. Fayed pulls off his jacket while the two men chain the now semi-conscious Jack into the chair. Fayed flips open a roll of vile-looking surgical knives. Jack is attached to a heart monitor.
I won't let you die until I'm ready. The Chinese didn't leave much for me to work with. But before you die, you're going to feel what my brother felt. I saw his body. I know how he died. I know what you did to him.
One man grabs Jack's head as Fayed approaches with a knife.
You don't need me to tell you that the nerves are bundled here.
Fayed gouges the tip of his dagger into the point just below where the collarbone meets the shoulder joint. Jack flinches and winces in agony. Fayed coolly walks across and picks up one of an array of laboratory bottles containing a clear liquid. He walks back to where Jack sits and douses the incision. Fayed looks on dispassionately.
Better. You need to get CTU Assad's location. That was the deal. Assad has lost faith in our fight. He thinks our tactics are failing. He's begun talking about compromise, about laying down our arms and negotiating. But there is no compromise, no negotiation. Assad is a traitor. And soon, inshallah, he will be dead.
That's right, Jack. CTU is about to kill the wrong man. Assad is behind these attacks. He's come here to stop them. He's come here to stop me.
Fayed, having been speaking intimately into Jack's right ear, now takes the fearful, long, thin metal implement he is holding and makes a sudden, violent movement behind Jack's back. Jack's eyes and mouth open wide and he arches backwards in the chair. Fayed walks dismissively away.
You will die for nothing.
At CTU, Nadia, Milo, Bill and others wait tensely.
Fayed doesn't call in 5 minutes, reassign everyone here.
This is Buchanan.
You kept your end of the deal, I'll keep mine.
I'm listening.
I have a transponder at Assad's location. 3358 11 north latitude. 118-21 40 west longitude. You'll find Assad there.
Where is that?
It's coming. Inglewood.
Have General Bowen mobilize the attack helicopters. I'll let the president know where to go. Cut off Fayed's access to all our surveillance.
I want to lock down all of our satellites. Shut them down. You got it?
6:57. Chloe stands looking on in deepest distress as the team mobilizes. Morris comes up behind her.
We did everything we could. I know it's truly awful, but if it stops these attacks, it's for the greater good. There's no one that understands that more than Jack.
Chloe, in tears, is embraced by Morris. Young Ahmed is sheltered by his white neighbors. President Palmer paces grimly. Military helicopters dust off. Fayed brandishes a pair of steel clippers and comes close to Jack.
Do you remember doing this to my brother?
He prepares to amputate Jack's finger.
Fayed,
what is it?
There is a call for you. It's important.
Okay.
Rabu. Said Sabar. Take it bien a kushi yati masa bejedu.
Fayed gets up unwillingly and leaves the cell with one of the guards, permitting Jack a moment's respite. 6:58. Fayed is handed a mobile. The call is from Ahmed.
Yes.
There's a problem. Tell me what happened.
The FBI. They took my father.
Where are you?
I'm at a neighbor's. Fayed, you know my father is innocent. He has no idea what we're doing.
If your father is meant to be sacrificed, that is how it will be.
Now tell me what the FBI said.
Jack, left alone with a single guard, looks around and then with his teeth rips off the Velcro tube attaching his arm to the monitor. He slumps as the machine flatlines. The guard rushes over to check what is happening. As he kneels down, Jack sinks his teeth into the man's neck and keeps hold as blood gushes from the jugular. Spitting out a mouthful of blood, Jack then fishes in the guard's pocket for the key to his chains. Pushing the guard's limp body to the floor, Jack carefully opens the cuffs, glancing circumspectly towards the door as he does so.
Good. You did the right thing.
Are you sure the FBI didn't find the package?
Yes, it's well hidden.
You need to deliver it soon.
I'll call you when I have it.
Ahmed hangs up and turns to find himself facing his friend.
Everything okay? Yeah, it was just my uncle. He's trying to find out where they took my dad.
Want to meet?
Yeah.
Fayed tosses the mobile to the second guard and gestures for him to come back into the torture chamber. Arriving in the doorway, he sees the body of Jack's victim and instantly draws his pistol. He looks around the cell, enraged and mystified. He opens a service hatch in the corner of the room. As Fayed rants, the blood of the corpse on the floor flows down through a grating. Below this grating stands Jack. He looks upwards through the metal grill and wipes blood from his face with his sleeve. 7 a.m. The end.
Why does it have to end there? I want to see what happens next. 24 Days Since continues tomorrow night at 9, with two brand new hours back to back. If you have to know more right now, head to sky1.co.uk. A rollercoaster ride next, though, as extreme as it gets.